Welcome back to the Tasting Room live stream. You are not Austin McElroy, sir.
I am not.
Matt Sanders in the house. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing really well, man.
Yeah. Pull that mic a little bit closer to you. There you go. Almost want to feel like you're going to bite it. Yeah. Well, man, welcome to my living room.
Yeah. This is a really cute little pad.
Thanks, man.
And the dogs to boot.
Yeah, I know. They're just over there living their best life.
Cuddling. Do they make guest appearances at all?
Yeah. Prudence will get up and she'll just come over here sometimes with squeaky toys. Yeah. Probably more often than not with squeaky toys. Yeah. So it gets a little annoying for the listeners, I'm sure. Right. But it's, what are you going to do? You can't get mad at that face.
No.
You know, I'm not going to share.
Oh man, is this juicy?
Austin is not here for a reason. And if you've watched this in the last couple of weeks, you should be able to surmise what that reason is, but I'm not going to say it because I don't know if I have permission to say it. So.
Fair.
Yeah.
He's still alive though.
Still alive and well.
Okay. Yeah. That's all that
and matters. Everybody's healthy.
Good.
So that's
everybody's healthy.
Yeah. That's the most important part. Okay. So before we jump into just a bunch of different things centered around the juice that's in the bottle that you brought here, what did you bring here? What is that? What are we sipping?
This is just a little Pice. It's a Mission grape or Pice, whatever you want to call it. It's, the Spanish brought it over to the South America and so it's taken on many different names, but this is like primarily coming out of Chile.
Okay.
Super delicious. Like sometimes they can be a little weird and kind of smoky, and I've had really, really bad ones.
Oh, this one's good.
Yeah, this is really tasty.
Yeah.
Like easy Pinot Gamay-ish. Mm-hmm. I just got through reading a great book, Godforsaken Grapes. And he kind of went into, kind of what's happening all around the world is, you know, everybody essentially pulls up these old, really cool vineyards of like great varietals that have been planted there forever or, you know, thousands of years, to like, you know, planting it to Chardonnay and Pinot Noir and Cabernet. And he kind of likens it in the book to this idea of like, no matter how much like I love Thai food, I don't want to eat Thai food every single meal. And so that's kind of because the market dictates that we should be drinking Chardonnay and Pinot and Cab and Sauvignon Blanc. That's what we should be planting and pouring. And that sounds like a world I want nothing to do with.
Yeah.
And so, it just kind of got me on, you know, another sort of trajectory of like trying to find these super unique varietals from all over the planet. And
like you needed another reason to buy more wine, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But we tend to find them, don't we?
Yeah.
For me, it's us. More bourbon. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Although the Flanagan wine might beg to differ, but
no kidding.
Charlie's now back there just like doing his thing.
If it's not like a prop.
No, it's definitely not a prop. Yeah. It's, he makes really good wine.
Oh my God. His wines are beautiful.
And so all of my friends and close ones love the fact that I have this much Flanagan because I will on birthdays and Christmas and they'll get a bottle usually because I get multiple boxes a year. So it's, you know, good. The best I can do.
You're a good friend to have.
I try. So I'm going to do this like a movie. We're going to like start like more towards current time. And then I want to go backwards.
Oh, interesting.
So, and you'll follow along here. So if you know Matt, you probably know him from his old stomping grounds, which is just to this day, one of my favorite, I mean, it currently is one of my favorite places in Tulsa, but especially when it was back at 18th and Boston, the vibe and everything that was there was just so unique and so cool. Vintage Wine Bar. It was your baby for how long?
18 years
18 up until this years.
last May.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So now let's go backwards. Okay. So your infatuation and love for the grape juice came from where?
So, I've like, honestly, one of the coolest, opportunities ever was the guy, my mentor that got me into wine. His name is, Paul James. He was the gardener guy on HGTV forever. Mm-hmm. In my prior life, I was a personal trainer and managed Fitzo, the gym over on Brookside that no longer is there. RIP.
RIP Fitzo.
It just didn't keep up with the times, but it was a great gym, great clientele. But I used to train his kids and kind of what where he kind of came in was like, he was giving me tons of money every month. And he was kind of like, I need to know who this person is that I'm, you know, giving this money to. Yep. And so, he had me over for dinner, and then they always are, and they still to this day always do Sunday night dinner. And, at that point in his life, he had been collecting wine. And so I got this really cool opportunity to like come into his space and cook. I mean, honestly, some of the greatest meals, no offense to any of my friends out there that are chefs, some of the best meals I've had in Tulsa have come out of that kitchen.
That's awesome.
And actually those chefs have had his food. And so they know exactly what I mean. Mm. So anyway, so he, always like paired wine with food. Like he brought his kids up like to understand like that it's, you know, it's meant to go with the food. And so he would talk about that and why. And so I just happened to be at this place and time with this beautiful human and his family. And so I got invited back and back and back and back and back all the time to Sunday night dinner. And he would always open up all these wines that he'd been collecting. And he got to that place, as we all do, that, you know, if you collect eventually just like this,
yep,
you got to drink it at some point.
Yep.
And so he was there. And so I got to try like old vintages of really, really cool wines that most people at the age of 21 would, well, one would never know what the hell that was, but then two, like that opportunity now in hindsight, still, I kind of kicked myself. And so that's kind of how I got into it. And
let me pause you. Do you remember one that you didn't try that now you're like, son of a bitch?
No, because he opened it, which is like, which is really, really cool. And it's like, kind of like, you adopt things that you learn along the way. And like one of the things that I adopted from him, and it's like what kind of put me in the trajectory that I came down, was, you know, at the end of the day, wine is just a beverage. It's just like a soda, a glass of milk, a glass of water. It's like, it's meant to be drank. Yeah. And so we do this weird thing where it's like, oh, we have to wait for this incredible moment to happen. That does or doesn't, and in any time it's fine. And so if I ever showed interest in something, he would just,
that's really cool. I love that.
You know,
so, I love people like that, that treat it that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, most of those bottles, except for the ones I've picked up this year, have been opened, you know?
Yeah.
And it's, that's the point. Like, what's the point of having them if you're not going to drink them?
And you know, a ton of collectors that have those, these bottles specifically on their back bar, and they will never open them.
And they're either trying to make money off it or they're whatever.
Yeah.
That's not the point.
That's not the point.
You know,
you shouldn't be doing this.
And to what you're saying too, like, yes, you can wait for that magical moment where this year's, or, you know, this certain vintage will be great in 2038 or whatever. But there's something to be said for, you can create a much more magical moment by opening it 13 years before that with company and with, you know, creating an experience out of drinking it. And so
exactly,
why wait?
And there's been many, many times that, like, at one point I had like a pretty serious, like 500 bottle collection. My moment for me, and it stuck with me forever, was like, you know, like whenever I got into wine, Paul would like watch me like geek out and get really excited and collect. Oh, man, like, this is what I'm buying now. This is what I'm really into. And it's like, he could see himself 20 years prior. And so, oh, this is cute, Matt. This is cute. But one day you'll see what I mean.
Right.
That's just a beverage.
Yeah.
And so I did this whole like Easter, like big, like to do with all my wine drinking buddies around a magnum of stupid expensive wine. And it was corked. And
oh, so no it way.
Was the moment that I realized, like, oh my God, like, it's like you waited 15 years to open up this really cool wine and it was for naught. Mm-hmm. And so it just like clicked on me and I was like, let's drink it all. And so it was like all my buddies going there and just like grabbing bottles and opening up really, really cool stuff. And because you could never drink the 500 that you had there.
No.
But we did some damage that day. And so, but that's like that, that's that moment. I also had a champagne moment, which, you know, there's sort of these unicorn bottles that you never get allocated. You just read about, or they're crazy expensive or whatever. And, I was actually at Paul's daughter's wedding in Hudson Valley, upstate New York. And he, I went into this little bitty, I mean, like the size of this room kind of bottle shop that was super charming. And they had a bottle of Solos champagne, which is like so hard to find.
Yeah.
Crazy, crazy unicorn bottle. I'd always read about it, really excited. And I was like, how much? And he told me, and
You picked up your jaw from the floor. Yeah,
I was like, but this, I've never come across this. This is the dumbest thing I'm going to do, but it's probably the best thing I'll ever
People don't understand unless they collect, whether it's wine, whether it's bourbon, whether it's, I mean, not so much beer, but art, whatever right? Like, I mean, there's just this moment where all rational thinking just leaves.
Yep.
It's, you found the bottle that you've been looking for in one way, shape, or form for who knows how long, and you're not going to leave that shop without it.
Yeah,
you can try to talk him down, you can try to whatever, but you're going to get that bottle.
Totally.
And they know that.
Yeah. And I mean, that was, I think, 6 years ago, and I've never seen it since. Right. And so, so that was amazing. So I get this bottle of champagne, go back to the hotel room. My girlfriend and I are getting ready for, the wedding that night. And, I'm in the shower and I hear pop. And to me, I was going to take it home and like wait for that amazing moment. And again, like this is post the first time.
Did you kind of lose your shit for a second though?
A split second.
Yeah.
And then like happiness. Cause like at the, like it was probably room temperature.
Yeah.
I put it in the fridge, but it had been there for maybe 5 minutes and like sweetest human in the world. Didn't know any better. And it doesn't matter at the end of the day.
Sure.
It's open. Let's do this.
Did you enjoy it?
Oh my God. It was incredible.
It's all that matters.
The best part was, so we have a glass because we're like hurrying to get out the door to go to the wedding. Have a glass. Bonkers wedding. Such a blast. Like incredible night. Get back to the room. We have to take a train back into New York the next morning. And, you know, 3/4 of the bottle is just still sitting there in the fridge with the cork off of it. And I was like, 7 o'clock in the morning, I was like, we got to drink this.
Of course, you can't just leave it.
And to those out there, everybody that knows me well, I'm not a morning drinker. I don't do the hair dog thing.
Yeah.
In that moment, you do what needs to be done. And that was what needed to be done. And so we sat there and like crushed a bottle of like incredible champagne, which was fantastic, by the way. And got on the train a little buzzed and
It's probably better than the night before. I had a time to breathe, had time to,
you know, and there's still effervescence to it. And, you know, I think champagne kind of gets a bad rap that, you know, it's supposed to be this like yeasty, stinky sort of like wine that a lot of the big negociants make. But in reality, it's a wine made from either Chardonnay, Pinot Meunier, or a blend of the three or two or whatever. And it should taste like those. Mm. And it tasted like a little bit of Chardonnay and a little bit of all the things were like, oh my gosh, like this is unbelievable, but with a little bit of bubbles to it. And it was,
I love that.
But it's like that, it goes to show like every moment you open up great wine is the right moment to open up great wine.
Yeah. I kind of took you on a rabbit hole there.
Off you've got to hold in my.
No. I love it. I love it because I do the same thing. I squirrel off and then I have to come back to the main point. So now we're at the point in your wine progression where you've started collecting, right? So how did vintage come into play, or what happened between and vintage? Then,
yeah. So, it was like the spark. Like once I, you know, was hanging out with Paul a lot and his family, like I got really into wine and food because they definitely obviously go together. But like I had the moment where I realized like, man, I want to like do this. Like I want to be in food and wine because it's like something that's, we all do it. Mm. And I think that it was like my eureka moment. Cause at the time I was 21 to 23 or whatever, that I decided that I wanted to be in the industry. And so I started like moonlighting at different, you know, places in town. Like my first gig was Celebrity Club, RIP again.
I love it. I do miss that salad.
Oh man. I was 21. I just turned 21 and started working at the bar there. One of my most memorable moments in that place was that weekend. It's like someone asked for like a flirtini or something, and I was 21 years old and knew nothing about, like, they just threw me in the weeds and like figured
sink
out
sink or swim. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's like, I, you know, this is pre like getting on and Googling things, you know, this is like 2000 or whatever. And so I like died inside. This person asked for a cocktail I didn't know. And I'm like, oh my God. And I, so I went home and like learned the top 100 cocktails in the world until my next shift. And then all, automatically I'm like one of the better, like one of the better bartenders in the city just because of that moment.
Yeah.
Man.
So I started going to, I worked at Lola's for a little bit. Aaron Post and I worked there together side by side, which was an incredible special moment for me.
I love that guy.
God, he's such a beautiful
saw him today man. Double shot.
Oh
yeah.
And yeah, so he, you know, so diligent in his work and everything that he does. And he was at that point. I think I would have to ask Aaron. I think we left around the same time. But anyways, I was working at Lola's with him one night, and John and Sherry Duvall, they were partners at Vintage. Vintage had just been open for like maybe 6 months. It was Vintage 1740 back then. Now it's Vintage Weimar now. And they were members at Fitzo. So I knew them well. They were sweetest people, still sweetest people. And they saw me and they were like, I didn't know that you did this. Like we've just opened the wine bar. We kind of got in a little bit over our head. Would you be interested in, on coming on board? And so at the time, Milton was the GM, Milton from, Park Hills. If anybody from Tulsa knows him, he's a staple. I didn't
put two and two together, but yeah,
God, man, he's, and talk about somebody with unreal knowledge.
Oh yeah.
Taught me so much. Great friend. So he was GMing at the time, and they needed somebody to be kind of boots on the ground that was there going to be at night. And so, you know, it was the sort of honeymoon phase of Vintage. And so we were slammed all the time. And, you know, you're at the time, it was like, there wasn't really a lot of like adult bars. Kind of the idea that they had with Vintage was, you know, they wanted it to be a place that women felt safe, which like obviously went with the aesthetic of like sort of the feminine feel. But then it was the first non-smoking bar in Tulsa.
No kidding.
Which is hilarious. That was 2004.
Wow.
And so those were the two things that were like, we want this.
Well, no wonder you were slammed.
Yeah.
yes, the bar was cool and the drinks were great, but I mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't want to smell like a lit cigarette when you leave. Where are you going to go?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so it spoke to obviously an incredible audience. And, so I started picking up shifts there, and then they brought me on full time. I left Lola's, and then, you know, they offered me the GM job, and that's kind of how I kind of came on to Vintage. And, it was a mess. Like, God love the people that were working there at the time. But it was like, you know, there's stereotypes that go along with.
Oh, sure.
You know, and some of those are true.
A lot of them are true. Are rooted in fact.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And so we didn't really have that because like Aaron and I were fairly straight edge at the time. And like, it was like we went to Lola's and worked and then got out of there. Mm-hmm. It was like it wasn't a party place or whatever. So Vintage had like a moment of like party place. And I was like, total square. And so whenever I came in, took over, it was like, let's clean house a little bit, and got a little bit more serious into wine. And yeah, it worked out really, really, really well, actually.
You know what's really funny? Some of the moments I remember best from old location were complete shit show moments. So like it had like this evolution of like,
oh, the ability to get there.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Like whether it was, I think it was right when Shambongs got big.
Oh God.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm sure you remember the days I'm talking about where it was just like people on tables and you're just like, what is going on here?
Okay. Well, we were, so Ashley Sutton brought me one for Christmas, and this was like in 2015. I think it was 2015 or something like that. Anyways, like Shane Bong had just kind of dropped. Mm-hmm. And so we were the first people to get it. And so she brought it in.
So I have you to blame for all these bars doing Shane Bongs.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. It became the bane of our existence. They're terrible to clean.
Yeah.
And it, but it was like, it was fun. It was like,
yeah,
it was like a really good idea.
Sure. And also from a business owner standpoint, what you can charge for those.
Yeah.
The money you make on those.
Yeah. It was our number one selling thing. You know, it looks like a full, like pour of bubbles that you would typically get. We charge the same price, but it was probably, you know, 40%.
Yeah. I was going to say maybe half.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you made, it was, it's easy cash grab and all businesses should have that, but,
absolutely.
But yeah, so she came and brought it to me for Christmas, took the Shane Bong, and it's so bubbly and I had no idea what I was doing. And so I burped and she was filming me and I just said Shane Bong. And so she posted it and then they reached out and put it on their website.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. Was it known as a Shane Bong at that point, or did you coin it?
No, they knew. So the company, my understanding about Shane Bong is that somebody wanted to make a glass pipe, this big, like deep, bold glass pipe, took a hit of it and it like burned really fast and it was such a waste. And it was like, well, that was stupid. And so I guess like sometime later, and this is all hearsay, but this is like fundamentally what my understanding of Shane Bong, how it started. A friend saw it and was like, oh, it kind of looks like a champagne flute. And there was like this dumbest, like fall back into money kind of moment in time for these people.
Yeah.
And they launched.
I actually love that.
Yeah. I know. Yeah.
But what I was getting at is you didn't out of the blue say Shane Bong and then they called it that. It was
already a thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I was going to say, this is an honor to meet you, sir.
Oh my God.
You named and coined the phrase Shane Bong.
And then it was kind of crazy. Like talk about those shit show moments. Like we, you know, had done Rosé Party for a very long time and Shane Bong not that year, I think, but the following year, they sponsored us. And so they sent us all this paraphernalia and like,
I might've been at that one.
Yeah, yeah. That one was fun. And we went through 10 cases of sparkling wine that year. I don't even know if anybody drank anything outside of sparkling.
Probably not.
Rosé that year.
Yeah. That was what, 2016?
I think that was 2016.
Yeah, I was at that.
Yeah.
Cause I moved here 2011. So that's about, it's about where my memory of vintage begins, is 2014, 2015.
Yeah.
Something like that. Okay. So let me backtrack for a second. So where in, or maybe we haven't gotten there yet, the urge for you to go back into the books and study and become a psalm and all that, where did that come into the equation? Did you feel like you needed that to run a wine bar?
No, it like was hand in hand. First of all, it's like anything like this, you get interested.
Yeah.
You kind of go down the rabbit hole. Right. And so, it was just, it went hand in hand. And actually at the time, it was, you know, all of my peers, like we were hosting it at least level one, we were hosting, at Fleming's. And so, you know, all of my peers at the time went and did that level one there. And so, so that was like, I think that was like 2007 or so.
So was that Lola's time before you went over to
that vintage? No, I was at Vintage.
Or you had just gotten there.
Yeah, I was at Vintage in 2005.
Okay. That's right. You said that.
I mean, it obviously it makes sense. It's sort of like, you know, unfortunately for the world we live in, especially in this service industry, like I want so badly, if you're going to do anything, be professional, like be the best. If you're going to be a garbage man, be the best garbage man in the world. Right. And so there's a way to figure out how to be great at it. And it's like reading and studying and tasting and being around people that open up great bottles and stuff like that. And so it just kind of lent itself to it. And so, it's just part of the, you know, moving up into that world. I kind of got disinterested in, like in the sort of the quartermaster sommelier, just because it was so service oriented. Mm-hmm. And I think my sort of philosophy of service was like kind of the way that I saw the, you know, the trajectory of the industry was like, you know, hands behind your back, white tablecloth, this mm-hmm. sort of like level of service.
Napkin like, draped over your arm.
Totally, man. Yeah, like that bores me. Like it truly.
Just open up the bottle.
Yeah.
Drink
like,
it.
If you want to go toe to toe and talk about like all of your knowledge, that's where like I felt like the knowledge itself went to. But like I wasn't trying to be this pretentious
I get that
guy. I wanted to be like it already, you being a beer guy, you fundamentally understand this. Like the difference between beer and wine is it's about the price point. Like
100%.
You can drink the greatest beer in the world because it's cheap.
You're out $8.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
like, you know, with
wine, it's different. So you go into it and everybody's so afraid that they're either going to be wrong of what they're going to say, or I just spent $40 on this bottle of wine that I don't know if I like it or if I do. Or, and so I really tried to always like be the guy that, you know, it was about you.
Yeah.
You know, they would typically, people typically would be like, what does Matt think? What does the wine bar guy think? And my thing was like, it doesn't matter what I think. Do you like it? If you like it, then good for you.
Where I utilized and took advantage of our friendship for my palate was once. No. But it's once I knew, like if I knew I liked a varietal, that's where I would start. Mm-hmm. And I would text you or call you and be like, okay, I know I like this. Totally. Where should I go?
Totally.
Should I stay in that lane? Should I, you know, I would have never had a, did you say it was a Pice? Is that how you say it?
Pice.
Would have never grabbed that bottle.
Sure.
Because I didn't know the profile. I didn't know what it was like, but I love Gamay. I love what that tastes like.
Yeah.
You know? And so you're very good at that. And it, I mean, you know your wine. So of course you would be, but
I mean, that's what I do.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like, and I feel
where did you think I was going?
Oh, no, because you would text me and be like, hey, can you put together
a
case or whatever? Yeah. And I would feel so bad because I wouldn't get back with you.
Oh, no. No, I wasn't going to call you out on here and be like, you asshole. You
the hot seat.
No. No, I appreciate you doing it. But it was also during like, wasn't it during COVID?
I think so. Cause that's
and a little bit before like, probably too. Yeah. But
yeah.
No, you've always been great. I mean, look, when I text friends like that I know are busy, I don't expect immediate like gratification of like, yes, I'll get that box and have it ready in 15 minutes. It's like, no,
but I do want, like, I have to say to you, like, I appreciate that so much because you could go to anybody and like that, that's an honor to me to like feel that respect from you. And so like, I really do appreciate it. I think honestly, you know, you will always have to steer me in, but like, I think part of like why I wanted to get out of that side of the industry was it was exhausting, being in front of people constantly and then having the accessibility to me and what I have. And so I think,
especially if you're like an introverted type person by nature,
Cause
like most people look at me and especially like, I go out a lot in quotations, or at least I used to more than I do now. But so people be like this extroverted guy and it's like, well, no, actually like I'm an extroverted introvert. Mm-hmm. Like I need my time, which is in here with the dogs to relax. Like I don't recharge in public places, but if I don't get the rubbing of elbows and the hugs and the like seeing people that I love and friends, I need that too. So it's a little bit of both, but like, I can't imagine because I had it in a way in the TV world. Like I could never be off when I was out.
Yeah, dude.
You know, and it's kind of the same thing, different world. And I don't tell me if you had this, I used to love people used to just make a game of it. To try to come up to me, no matter where I was, you name the place it's happened, in this town and prove to, I don't know if it was to themselves or to me, that they knew more about sports than me.
Oh,
and so it was just like, all right, come on, bring it.
I love you.
Like, let's have this conversation. Let's go. And then I would say something like, no, you're wrong. I'm like, look it up. And they'd be like, yeah. Well, shit. You're right.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if wine people would do that to you at all, or if it was more deferential of like, okay, you know, you own this place. Like, you know.
Yeah. I think that yes and no. I think that typically it was older people that, you know, they'd been collecting forever and they do want to flex and they do want to show like what they have been collecting and where they've mm-hmm. been and all this. I love it. Like, yeah, that's awesome. Like I haven't been there. I don't know.
Yeah.
And so that's really the only time. I think that's probably the only time I really felt like that. I think more going back to what I was saying is like, I felt like people were intimidated by wine. And so they were apt to like sit back and like listen and just kind of like take it in. And then moments later you'd hear them regurgitate it to the next person, you know, which is great. You know, I mean, and I appreciate that. And I love the idea of being a professional, you know, I love the idea of like, if you're an accountant, like I want to call an accountant to like help me with whatever needs to be done.
Absolutely.
And the same thing from the wine perspective, you know, it's like, we don't need to be know-it-alls. We need to know what we like. And something about that I really, really like about you is that, your willingness to, you know, to try. And so
of course
people like me, I have the ability to like, you're painting a picture. All you're doing whenever you're talking to me about like, I had this wine and this wine and this wine, like I know what all that stuff is.
Yeah.
And so all you're doing is telling me like, this is the palette that
I can see it like a beautiful mind in your mind. Like all these things just like flashing up like, oh, I should give him this. I should give him that. I should do this.
But very slow.
right.
And no math.
No math at all. So what, for those listening that are intimidated when they go to a nice restaurant and there's a sommelier and the sommelier comes to the table, what information, like how should you interact with a sommelier? What information should you give them? Totally. What's too much? What's not enough? What should you expect? What shouldn't you expect? Help us out. They don't know what we're doing.
Yeah. Again, going back to what I just said, let the pro be the pro. Mm-hmm. Like that's the thing. Like one of my favorite things about travel is like, I'm not trying to work. I'm on vacation.
Yeah.
You know, and typically, and God love all my friends, this is now they've gotten very used to the way that I operate, but you know, they'll hand me the wine list and it's like, I'm not trying to work. Like I'm thinking I want to do the fish. Let's talk to the somm, see what pairs well with that. But like, honestly, like let them do their job. Like, and there's nothing more deflating. And especially from my standpoint, witnessing it from like bringing up beautiful wine people that worked with me at Vintage, you know, it's kind of insulting whenever it was just like, well, tell Matt, I want something. Just tell him it's me. He'll know exactly what I want. And it's like, you're taking away somebody's ability to do their job.
Yeah.
And it's kind of insulting, you know? And it's like, you're there on a date. Just relax, like sit back and like let your experience unfold for you, because the places that do it right, it's about the experience. It's not about, you know, so I realized like early on, like, you know, there's always like something that I was into that I wanted, or the staff was into that I wanted the people to get into. And it's like, it's hard to bridge that gap if they're always ordering the exact same menage a trois, you know, whatever it is. The fact that you drink that, we're playing the same game. That's all I care about.
Yeah.
I just want to meet you somewhere, you know? And so, tell somebody, I really like menage trois. And typically people will like apologize about that. And it's like, I hate that for them.
Oh.
Like you like what you like.
Exactly. You like what
you
like.
Who cares?
Yeah.
Like we all like dirty mac and cheese or whatever it is. We don't
that talk craft about. Box in the pantry. Yeah.
I didn't want to call you out for that, by the way.
It's in there. no, it's actually not.
But you know, we like what we like. And so it's like, tell them that you're into it. Like I really like menage a trois. Judge me if you want. They never will. And then it's like, I understand your palate. Just from you saying that, I understand mm-hmm. what you want.
Now, do you ever try to challenge that? Or is that not the place for that? Like if it's not me, if it's not someone that you know and they tell you something like that as a psalm, do you ever think, do you just stay in that lane? Or do you ever try to maybe challenge the palate a little bit in your pairing or whatever?
No, I try to stay in the lane. I obviously would never, like, the thing about what I did at Vintage for so long was like, we specialized in boutique wines. Mm-hmm. We specialized in like family owned. I believed fundamentally that I'm a small business owner. I wanted to support other small businesses, you know, and these big conglomerates that are taking over, you know, the world are like, to me, like it's a yawn, you know, yeah. You can get that a dime a dozen. For the most part, the way that we drove the wine list was something that you couldn't see, you know, in anywhere else. You weren't yeah. going to see it at most places. And so for me, it was just like, you know, that's where it's the ability to just like pour something off and say, I know you like Ménage à Trois. So to me, I'm like, so it's something a little bit bigger. There's like a little bit of residual sugar there. Fruity, like it's probably arguably it's grape juice that's got a little alcohol in it, you know, yeah, yeah. or a lot of alcohol in it. So I know that lane. So I'll like see you there. And so kind of what I did over the years was eventually you earn the respect. And you always drove them into that similar direction. And then, you know, I would be excited about something new. And then John would walk in and I'd be like, I know he likes Gamay and Pinot. Check this out. And it's this or mm-hmm. something that's, it's in the same lane. It's paying respect to you and your palate. And then, you know, eventually it's like, what are you into? And that's where
that's the key that happens. Opens the box. Exactly. It's like, all right. Yeah.
Cause then it's like the world is, cause right. like, again, that's what I mean about like, we're playing ball. The fact that you drink wine, we're playing the same game. Eventually what happens with drinking those wines or not eventually, a lot of times people continue drinking, like your palate will get exhausted cause they're bigger, they're sweeter, you know? And eventually that just like gets tiring. And so you're like, my friend really likes Pinot Noir. I'll try that out. And so that's where,
yeah.
you know, you kind of go down the path, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. And I actually love this. And I think of it as like a tip of the cap to my palate to an extent. When I go out to eat with friends, 9 times out of 10, I get handed the food menu and it's like, totally. Just order.
Yeah.
Just order. Just order for the table. Yeah. Just order whatever you want. And I love it because it's not my job.
Sure.
Right. If I was a chef or if I was, you know, I'd be like, oh God, again. But to your point of what you were saying about the key that unlocks the box a little bit, you have to do it at the right time. You have to pick your moments. But if it's not overly busy and it's a place where you don't know the chef personally, but you know the chef, the best meals I've ever had, my order has been, yeah, we want to try this and this. And then a couple things that
chef recommends.
Yeah. Whatever the chef is feeling.
Yep.
And half the time it's not on the menu.
Sure.
You know,
yeah,
and it comes out and it's just like, what the fuck? Like, this is unbelievable.
Well, cause that's yeah. ultimately why we do it. It's you yeah. want to have the guest that's interested in like, well, what's he back there excited mm-hmm. about? You know, these things typically are the things that pay the bills.
Yeah.
And if they have the ability, and a lot of places don't, but a lot of places do. And if you can follow that. And I mean, the cocktail world is essentially that, you know, yeah. it's like you see the cocktail list and you see on the back bar that you've got mezcal and you're like, well, what else is there? You know? And so it's like bartenders or mixologists, whatever you want to call them. They're like miniature chefs, but on the front yeah. side. And for
booze, I found though that like, and I'm not going to name any bars in this town, but you can catch, we'll call them mixologists on the wrong night where it's like, you try to play that game where oh, it's yeah. like, you know, she'll have a gin and tonic and I don't know, man, what's look good. Like what I'm at a loss. And then they just play that like bitterly mean game with you. Where it's like, well, I don't know what you like. It's like, well, I'm trying to tell you, like, there's really nothing I don't like. So like, yeah. what's, you know,
yeah.
well, you got to give me directions. It's like, this isn't fun anymore. Like, just give me an old fashioned. I don't
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I'm trying to like, let somebody be adventurous here and you're just
yeah.
bringing me down. You
yeah.
know,
where it is with me, especially with cocktails at the time, I'm a wine guy. And so when we moved downtown, like the city chose for us to be a cocktail bar. I didn't want that. I would have rather it been like all wine all the time, because that's what I'm
passionate. We are going to talk about that move here in a second too.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so, and for me, like, creative process is very long. I'm a perfectionist. I'm a Virgo, so I don't know if that's like,
is that one of your things? Okay. Okay.
They say it.
Depends on where the stars and the moon are.
Yeah.
And
exactly. All of
it. Yeah.
And so, but I like, so for me to like, you know, make a dish or make a cocktail, whatever, it has to be me doing it multiple times before I can put it out in front of. So somebody coming in and being like, I like, you know, cranberry and pineapple and vodka, make me a drink with that. It's like, that to me is, that's, I can't just on the fly do something like that.
Sure.
Because I don't want to put something in front of you that's bad. Like,
do you think that's the fear?
No.
Or do you think it's that they're busy and they're just like, no, tell me what you want?
Well, I think that there's maybe.
Well, it depends on the,
yeah.
Situational.
For me, it always was always like, I don't want to put an inferior product. I don't know if you remember, but there was a moment at the old space at 1740. We did omakase night.
Oh yeah.
It was Thursday nights. And it was like, you know,
that was great.
It was whatever we were working on kind of deal. And the concept was great. The execution was not where I would have liked it, because it was like your team, you know, some of them would not practice at all. Mm-hmm. And so cocktails to me are very Mr. Potato Head. It's like, take out the vodka, add mezcal, change the acid, change the sugar, and it's the same thing. As long as the ratios are all the same,
right.
It can fall inside of like a balanced cocktail and it's probably fine. But to sign your name to it, I think that that's where I was like, I think that this is kind of a failed, you know, experiment.
Yeah, yeah, I get that.
And so, but cocktails were thriving at the time, and that's why we did it. And so, but to your question, it's like, I think that, yeah, there's two camps. It's like people that suck at their job and don't want to do their job. And that's fair. What they're doing.
Yeah.
Is not wanting to do their job. And then there's the people that like, you know, give me something. Like, what are you typically into? I'm into bourbon. Okay. Like, you like old fashions, Manhattans? Like, yeah, great. Okay. From that, the way that I operate is like, I'll give you classic options that maybe you've never heard of.
Yeah.
Like a Boulevardier or
sure.
Something that you're like, oh, I've never heard of a Boulevardier or a Vucre. And it's like, it's ish.
It's close enough. Yeah.
But then you see
the subtle differences. Hit. And so, yeah.
And they're like, oh my God, this is so great. And that's what they want.
I think the best thing that happened to the cocktail scene in Tulsa and maybe Oklahoma was the Valkyrie list of adjectives.
Oh my God, it's so awesome.
I mean, it was the coolest. You picked three, for those that don't know. It used to be printed on the menu. I don't know if it is anymore. Well, they don't print menus anymore, but I don't know if it's even.
I think it is.
Yeah. But you can still play the game.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, it was, you're thinking like, boozy, classic, fruity. I mean, there's just all these different descriptors. Great. There's probably
refreshing.
Well, there's probably like 24 of them or so. And you got to pick three.
Yeah.
You didn't know what you were getting.
Totally.
You knew it had those three characteristics.
And again, brilliant on Aaron Post, like
100%.
That idea of like, and they're still trained that way because,
like,
that's something which is so great about Aaron. It's like, or Valkyrie, it's like, you know, if you had an experience at his place, he wants you to, you know, for you to have it again. And so for you to be like, I don't know, that bartender's not working tonight. You know, like that world sucks, man. Nobody wants to like go into a bar like that.
That's Jimmy's awful. Not here. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
You want a beer and a shot?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I want my drink.
And especially on that level,
yeah,
the expectations are high whenever you're creating experiences for people. Cause like at the end of the day, like what we did was, or do it, like we were selling wine. Yeah. But we were selling experiences. Like I want you to come back. And for the most part, I would tell you like, you're going to like this wine. I would talk about it and, you know, do it in a way that people would be like, oh my God, this is going to be exciting. If I would have just handed them a glass of wine without giving them any context, they would have been like, you know, either I like it or I don't, or I don't know, I don't get it.
Perception becomes reality.
Absolutely. And if the person in front of you is professional and they say it in a way that you're like, yeah, that yeah, I'm excited about this wine. It's so weird. I would never order this, but I really like this wine.
All right. So at what point in old vintages life cycle did the thought, idea, realization cross your mind that I might have to move locations?
So that was, So that was like 2017. I knew that we were going to renegotiate for the lease. I never saw eye to eye with my old landlord. I believe fundamentally in like, yeah, you're renting, but I'm bringing equity to your building.
Sure.
We work together. Like, it doesn't mean it's, you know, all roads are my way or the highway. And so, and we just couldn't, we just never saw eye to eye. And then honestly, like another thing, I don't know if it's bigger or smaller or whatever, but it was in conjunction with that was like, I knew that someone was going to open up a wine bar downtown. Like, right. So it was going to happen. And Noah Bush, one of my best friends, he had talked about like, I want to do a wine bar, you know? And so it's like, and he's downtown. He's like got his Hodges and Saturn and like, I can feel like it's going to happen one day. And so it was just this moment where I was like, why wouldn't it be me? And so that sort of created the thought process. And you know, it, you know, one thing led to another. Sure. I had, the right people, and yeah, it's one of those things. It's bittersweet. I love old vintage. I love new vintage. What I thought whenever we moved downtown was it was going to be like, you know, we had incredible regulars, like 2 to like 6 day a week regulars. And then we're going to take all those people and we're going to pile more people on downtown. I was going to build this beautiful space that, you know, got written up in Architectural Digest, like this incredible space. And everybody would want to go, and people are creatures of habit. At the end of the day, what I learned is like, we're creatures of habit, and our clientele was a little bit older. They didn't want to go downtown.
Yeah.
So they, no one followed us. Like, of all those, you know, 75, 100 groups that came in all the time, 3 groups came in.
No kidding.
Yeah. So it was heartbreaking. It like,
yeah,
it was a really tough time actually for me, because I was so
now you're invested. Questioning every
yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah. I made a horrible decision.
Right.
And then I had my sort of epiphany moment where I was like, I'm so caught up in like why the people aren't following me. You know, I'm now like overlooking the fact that this cute little couple comes in 3 times a week.
You're making new regulars.
And I'm not spending any time investing.
Right.
And that was my moment to like go, okay, all good. We just have a new business moving on down the road.
In hindsight, if you could have renegotiated the lease and come to some sort of agreement, would you have still tried to open one downtown, or was that too close?
Okay. No, it was, okay. The goal was for it to be kind of like sort of a high dive. It was going to be more of like natural wine and good cocktails, not heavy in the wine part of it. Mm. But a really fun, sophisticated list that, you know, the people in Maple Ridge could walk down and not get something totally weird. And then open up this serious wine bar. I just couldn't come to terms with what they were asking for. So the goal was to keep both.
Sure. And now too, what breaks my heart the most is that, I mean, look, I love Farm Bar. It's a great restaurant. Yeah, totally. It's fantastic. Yeah. But imagine, I'm sure you've thought about this, but with what's happening in that neighborhood now, if vintage was still there, I mean, it would have like just put a bow on top of like, I mean, it's becoming such a cool little neighborhood.
That's so great.
And there's no wine bar.
Yeah. I'm so thankful for Quigley's and
Tina's, which is great. And,
the grocer, it's like, that's
and the Merc is still the Merc.
Oh, yeah.
It's Dale's is still Dale's. Yeah. And I mean, it's just, you know,
the thing for me, 18th of Boston was so beautiful because it was like you're stone's throw away from some of the wealthiest people in this part of the country. Mm-hmm. And it's this great little corridor. You either, you know, you end at 18th and you turn left and you go into Maple Ridge, this very affluent neighborhood. with great people, where you turn right and you get on Riverside and you move out to drive out to South Tulsa after you get off work. And so happy hour was always great for us. And so the fact that there was lack of vision for the overall like neighborhood,
right?
That how can you not communicate with these people that live right here, man?
I mean, it was an untapped resource. Yeah. That was just,
and that was always my argument. There. Yeah. It was like, why are we not trying to get those people to walk their kids down on Saturday and have breakfast? And so anyways, yeah, that's, yeah, if I could have, I absolutely would have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's next? You got out of yeah, Vintage, man. a year ago?
No. Yeah. So in 2022, I made wine out at Raptor Ridge for a few months, which was maybe one of the coolest experiences.
Where is that for people that don't know?
So yeah, Raptor Ridge is Scott and Annie Scholl, really great friends of mine. I've known them since the inception of Vintage. They're in Willamette Valley, and they, you know, obviously do Pinot Noir. That's what Willamette Valley's known for, but they do all the really cool varietals. and they do other really cool varietals. And so I needed sort of a break, a decompression. And so I reached out to Annie and Scott and said, you know, do you guys have space to bring me on this year? And so I went out and worked harvest last year. Me and one of my now great buddy of mine that's from South Africa, it was just he and I, we were the interns. Typically interns are like 21 to maybe 24.
Sure.
He was 40 and I was 42.
People don't understand the work that goes into harvest too.
Dude,
it's work.
It was our shortest day was, I think, maybe 10 hours. Maybe, but it was typically like 12 to 16s. I had a day off in 2 months. And so like my knees were wrecked and, you know, and it's funny because my generation, my age, like I never said anything,
kept
my head down, worked my ass off, but it was such an incredible experience.
It's what you needed at the time.
I did. Yeah. I did. I needed like, and I think for me, it was like to see if I was still passionate about wine, and I'm fundamentally, I absolutely love wine. It just like, I needed a space. I needed time to like evaluate like where you are in the world, recenter, figure it out. And really it was a way to escape and it kind of sent me on a new path. And so, so essentially got out of Vintage in May of last year, been doing like a lot of consulting for wine buyers, like friends that collect wine. And then my fiance and I, for those listeners out there that don't know this, are moving to Jacksonville, Florida.
So far away, man.
So far away. But the good thing is I'll be here, I think, 2 to 4 times a year based on my new job, which is I just actually got my offer letter last week, accepted the job. I'm going to go work for Vine Street Imports.
Ooh, so this is breaking news to me. Last time we spoke, hadn't received that.
Yeah. Fate, like whatever, like or at the end of the day, I reached out to Aaron Meeker, a good buddy that he's the national manager of Vine Street, sales manager. And I was like, you know, do you have contacts down in Florida? Like, this is what I'm doing. What I don't want to do is this. You know, do you have any recommendations who I should chat with? And he was like, whoa, hold on. Let me talk to Ronnie. Let's see if we can figure something out. So he called Ronnie and they chatted and then he got back with me and was like, what if we brought you on? Like, we don't have anybody really representing Florida that well. It's the third largest wine market in the country. And he was like, I really would love to get kind of boots on the ground down there. And so we chatted, kind of worked back and forth on it. And yeah, I'm like, their book is crazy awesome. So it's an import company. I'll work with wholesalers and like sell wine, only wine. You know, it's like a lot of these companies, you've got spirits and you got beer and I'm a wine guy. And this is like the perfect deal and kind of the path that has kind of been on since leaving Vintage has been this sort of moments of like this is crazy pinch you kind of deals. And I, again, landed that moment again. So
congratulations, man.
Yeah, thank you.
When I hear import, my mind immediately goes to like France, Italy, that kind of thing. Is that where the majority of the portfolio lives?
Their portfolio. So he started in Australia back in 1999.
Some Malbecs.
Yep. In Australia.
Oh, okay.
Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, they do English bubbles, which are, you know, up there with some of the best champagnes in the world. So England, Slovenia, South America, so Argentina, Italy. So it's 7 countries. They're very focused on what they do, and it's about having like, you know, precise, balanced, pretty wines, but like, you know, not chasing trends, but like, you know, being relevant, you know. So they've been doing it for over 20 years now. And Ronnie, that owns the company, his last name is Sanders as well. So we always had this like bonding thing.
Yeah.
A few years ago, whenever Miles Sanders was playing for Philly, he brought me a Miles Sanders jersey.
I love that.
Which is amazing. So we've always been really good buddies. And the way that the world works, which I love so much, is like, sometimes the world works for you.
Yeah.
You keep up a great attitude. And I've somehow throughout the years always been positive.
Yeah.
And
what I've learned too in this conversation, and it's obviously not the first time we've talked, but hearing you like go through that story, not many people are able to realize the epiphany moment when it's happening and act on it almost in that moment as well.
Sure.
But whether it was the moment of like, oh, I don't just need to store this wine, I can drink it, or the moment of, you know, like I need to be in the industry, or the moment of I need to get away, I need to go. Like, you've been really good at that. And I think that says a lot about just your flexibility in life.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. And that's how you land on your feet. Like, you have to be flexible, right? Like, you can't, if you're stiff and rigid and you're not going to land on your feet.
Yeah. We're living in the past. We're thinking about the future. Yeah. I live fundamentally in the present, and I've always done it. And it like, sometimes life happens for you. Mm-hmm. And like, you obviously have to put in the work, but that's the thing. If you put in the work, then you're constantly seen, you know, and it's like you're an asset to somebody on some level. And I know your viewers always wonder the same thing about themselves. And it's like, just put in the work, whatever it is that you're doing today, like just be the best at what it is. And life, it's the most beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. It happens, you know, and it's like, you can choose your path. And I've been very, very fortunate, and especially coming from where I came from, like I'm crazy, crazy fortunate to be in the world that I am.
You can love this country, you can be frustrated with it, but fact of the matter is you can pave your own path.
Totally.
It's out there.
Absolutely.
Like I just got low key excited because I realized now I can ask you for boxes of wine from countries I've never tried wine before. So I was like, dude, make me like a 6-pack. Send it this way.
Make sales.
Yeah, right. So exactly.
Absolutely.
I'll be your first customer, buddy. All right. Before I let you go, cause it's been an hour. When you think of a non PG moment at either vintage location, a story, what's the first thing that comes to mind? And I didn't prep you on this, so I'm
oh my God,
but I wanted it to be spur of the moment. Like, do you have one? Remove
all sex.
Fair. I'm sure there's been
non PG.
It just makes you laugh when you think about it.
Oh man. Yeah, this is totally, I wish you kind of would have prepped me.
But then it would have been like
stories.
It's okay. You can just,
How out there can we be right now?
You can be as out there as you want.
So at the old vintage, this was like a trying moment for me in my life. So at the old vintage, we had these like big, beautiful bathrooms, and the men's bathroom specifically was like a urinal. And then it was like this, that deep, like stall that like could have fit 8 people in there or whatever, but it was just one toilet. And one of my employees came in, and like the defeat, his face was just like so broken. And he was like, man, I don't get paid enough to deal with what happened in the bathroom.
Oh, no.
And I was like, oh God, what is it? And I walked in there, and you know, the stall is like, it's this huge stall. And so there's the toilet, and then there's like, obviously it's for handicap accessibility. Sure. So that's part of why there's this big lane. And someone took a dump.
No.
Right on the floor. And it wasn't like I missed the toilet
next body. To the toilet on purpose.
It was obviously on purpose. And that was the moment where I was like, I don't get paid this much.
No.
And I know that if I pawn it off on the cleaning people tomorrow, they're quitting. So I have to deal with this.
Oh, buddy.
So that was, and it, now that I'm saying it, it's like, yeah, there's a lot of those like very bad, not PG moments that. Thank you, Tulsa.
Yeah, right.
Whoever you were, hopefully you know.
Hopefully that's one of the regulars that didn't come over to the downtown location. Exactly. You can leave them at 18th and Boston. Lisa can deal with them at Farm Bar. Watch her listen to this and be like, holy shit, they did it.
I knew. That was my 1 second of fame. It got on air.
Oh. Well, man, thanks for coming over. Thanks for doing this. Good luck in Jacksonville. You can be a Jaguars fan now? Is that like... embedded
I think
in.
That's part of the ploy with my brother-in-law that is kind of the crux of why we're going down there. It's like he offered Megan, my fiance, like a really incredible opportunity. So that's where it all started. And so it was like, you know, trying to find the bait to kind of keep me along to go, hey, do you want to move to Jacksonville? I'm like, I need season tickets, man. Like,
yeah,
this is how this is gonna work.
This is my asking price.
Yeah. So I haven't put the pressure, but I definitely will be checking out games down there if they don't move to England.
I've heard that that's
weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like excited to like, cause like I grew up in Kansas City. So I'm like, love the Chiefs, but like going to a pro football game is incredible.
It's so much fun.
Yeah. No matter what team it is, it's a fun experience to be a part of. So yeah, I'm excited.
When's the move?
So we moved the end of April. A really good group of friends of ours are kind of sort of a last hoorah going to Portugal in April. So we'll come back and then kind of pack up and then slowly meander down there towards the end of April, 1st of May.
We'll have a little bit of time to drink some wine before you leave town.
For sure, man.
And then we'll catch up whenever you come back.
Yeah. And I'll be here. They're part of my market. So
Matt Sanders, love you, man.
Love you.
Appreciate you. Thanks, you guys, John, for watching, and we'll see you next week. Take care.